Gavrilik, who's unmarked as he streaks away into an open goal.
Hit the boundary line.
Oh, the post is broken. Matthews hit it.
Boy, oh boy, wow, wee. He shoots towards goal. What more can you say?
Welcome to part two of the draft takeover of the Herald Sun footy podcast, and we're gathering steam here. This is Jordan Pinto here with Dan Batten to talk AFL draft with you for the next 45 minutes. We're 3 weeks out now from the national draft on November 24, the first night. Anyway, Dan, it's getting close now.
It sure is, Jordan. It's very exciting. We've been given another week as well with the draft takeover, which is exciting. I'm sure we'll be given another run, but obviously 3 weeks, or just over 3 weeks left until the draft, and we've got a very special guest coming up from the Giants in recruiting manager Adrian Caruso. So really looking forward to chatting to him.
We do indeed. Now, you spoke about the big names on this show last week who we kicked off, and, you know, forget Ralphie, forget Macca. You know, we're taking over. We've got the big guns on. You mentioned his name before. 3 weeks out from the AFL draft, Adrian Caruso from the Giants. Adrian, welcome. And how are you going? How's the team placed 3 weeks out?
Yeah, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on. We're in an interesting position now. Yeah, as you say, we've got 3 weeks until draft time. Obviously being near the top end of the draft gives us a good spot to be in, and some big decisions to come in the next few weeks. But yeah, I suppose from our point of view, it's just exciting that, you know, now we can get out and do some home interviews, and we can do some meetings, you know, as a recruiting team, which we haven't been able to do. So I think it's, the timing wise, it's all lined up in a positive sense for us now to get together in the next 2 or 3 weeks and make some of these hard calls.
Watching your behind the draft video from last year, Adrian, it seemed like all the pieces really seemed to fall into place despite you guys not even be able to head to games at all. Does that fill you with confidence going into this year, or do you think, you know, this draft, anything could happen on the two nights in November?
No, I think we're always prepared. Like, obviously, there's been challenges that everyone has had to deal with in the last couple of years, but we still feel like we know enough about these kids from what they've done, even if not in their draft year, but in previous years. And the amount of work we do on their backgrounds and through interviews and, psych testing and all that sort of stuff, we feel like we've got a good enough handle on the players that when it comes to draft night, we're prepared and we can call their names out. Now, it's always going to be a challenge because, you know, there's going to be some guys that are just underexposed, and you're comparing players who have played 20 games in their draft year to players who have played 6 or 7. But ultimately, that's our job, is to, you know, go off what we see and project what they're going to produce at AFL level down the track. And I feel like the amount of work that we do, along with probably every club, gives us a sense of confidence that, you know, we'll be able to, you know, make the most informed decision on the night.
Absolutely. You speak about, talking about, you know, these kids, how do you view this pool as a whole in terms of talent at the top, in terms of depth, and how many picks or players do you see you guys taking in November?
Yeah, I suppose our plan and strategy has always been around bringing in 3 players. Obviously at the moment we sit with picks 2 and 13, and then we've pretty much got some late picks there that where our plans would look at some academy players, and Josh Faye is one of interest to us, depending on where that bid comes. I think overall, looking at the pool, you know, I think it's a very even group. I think you can probably separate the first 8 or 9 guys, and then after that, it's just such an even group of players from, you know, 10 through to 40. We feel like where our picks are situated, we might get first crack at something with pick 2, you know, from that first bracket of players, and then once we get to pick 13, in a way, we feel like we might have, you know, first crack at something from that next batch of players. And we feel like we're in a good spot with both of those picks to address some needs, but also just bring in some players that we've got confidence in that can help us, you know, short, medium, but obviously long term.
Yeah, just before, I guess, we go into those groups of players winding back, you talked about the recruiting team meetings you plan to have over the next 3 weeks. You talk about that group of 40 players, or up to 40, and how even it is after that 10. What do those meetings, I guess, look like now, 3 weeks out? Do you sort of sit down and go through all the players again, or do you let your other team, your interstate guys, present to you? Or how does that sort of work, just, I guess, as a bit of an insight for outsiders?
Yeah, it's a good question. I suppose by now we have a fair idea with those 2 picks that of the players that we like and the players that we think are going to help us. And obviously there's factors in terms of, you know, list needs, where we rank their talent, and whether or not we think they're going to be a good fit for our club. And so, you know, there's no point in us right now going through 40 kids when there's really only, you know, a small group of players that are of serious interest to us. So, you know, with pick two, we've probably got four guys on our list that, you know, we think are worthy of being selected with our first selection. So we'll hone in on those four. And then with pick 13, you know, we're probably down to a group of, you know, to eight players that we feel like would be good options for us there. So, you know, we're ultimately only looking at, you know, say 12 or 13 players as opposed to 40. And as I said, you know, it is even, but, you know, of those other kids that we're not looking at, it's not as if we are sitting here saying we don't think they're going to be good players, but we're more just looking at our list and where we think we're at. And those guys might just not be a great fit for us, but, you know, we can see them being good players, but it's also not a great time investment for us to go through in depth those players who are not ultimately going to be Giants players.
You mentioned those four players sort of on your radar. Obviously, the likes of Finn Callahan, Josh Rochelli, and the two talented tools at the top, Josh Gibkiss and Mac Andrew, probably in that frame. With your that pick too, will you be looking to pick on needs or the best available? Obviously, we expect Jason or Francis to be off the board, but do you... will you be looking to pick on needs, or will it be a case of the best available there of those array of players?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's an age old debate: needs versus, you know, best talent. I don't think you can have a philosophy that is just around drafting needs with all your picks, and then I don't think you can have a philosophy that's purely just best available. I think it's case by case, and we have to weigh that up. Sometimes the best available might not be what you need, but if you believe that the talent level is that far above the other players, then you've got to factor that in as well. So that, those are all the things that we'll be discussing in the next few weeks. You know, usually after trade period is when you can sit back and assess where your list is at and you know, where you think your strengths are and where you need to get better. And ultimately, until we go through the process of, you know, doing all our work on all those boys, it's hard to really form a line one way or the other. I think generally, though, our rule has always been, you know, we don't believe in continually drafting good players if we don't think they're going to be able to fit into our best 22, because, you know, we've had some players leave who couldn't get in, and we don't want that to happen again if we were to draft someone in an area of the ground that we're well stocked in and they don't get in and they leave for opportunity in 2 or 3 years. So that comes into play. But we also want to make sure that, you know, we are making sure that we're bringing in players that we believe are capable and we're not reaching for a need just for the sake of addressing a spot on your depth chart. And that's why it's such a challenging position to be in. And you know, these guys that are all there that we rate highly, as everyone does, you know, we're only going to be able to pick one of them, which is, I suppose, part of the challenge, but it's also really exciting that, you know, we're in a position where we can choose the one that we want, you know, with a pick that was traded in, you know, through last year's trade period on the night.
Yeah, that makes sense. And there are two players, obviously, linked to father-son in Nick Dacos and Sam Darcy. In terms of bids for them, will you look to, if you do choose to bid on those players, obviously Collingwood and Bulldogs fans will be nervously waiting to see whether you guys do a bid and whether it is pick two or pick three. Obviously, the points differential there on the draft index will be quite significant. Will it be a case of needs for that as well if you do choose to go down that path?
To be honest, we haven't really gotten too much into detail with those bids. You know, given how tricky the decision with our own pick two is and how much work there is still to be done on that, that's our focus at the moment. I know everyone is keen to know if we're going to bid, who we're going to bid on first, you know, all that sort of stuff. But, you know, that'll probably play out the week of the draft. I can't imagine us spending too much time on making a decision before we finalise what our plans are with our picks. You know, obviously, you know, Darcy and Dacos are great players and they're going to be great players for the clubs that they go to. But because they're ultimately not going to end up with us, we feel like, you know, we really want to nail our picks first, and that's pick two and pick 13 and our draft order of the guys that are going to be available to us before we spend too much time really working out where those guys rank. It's also hard to place, you know, Darcy and Dacos in our order until we have our order set on the guys that are available. So that's probably one that's going to have to wait until the week of the draft. And, you know, I think ultimately we might bid, but, you know, we might not bid. And that's I suppose, as honest as I can be on that one. It's just a really hard one to make a call on at the moment before having done all the work on the boys that, you know, that are in the frame for us with that early pick.
Just moving away, I guess, from your guys, you mentioned you know, someone like Nick Daicos is not going to be at the club next year. How do you see the debate between him and Jason Horne-Francis? I've seen him up close over here in SA for a long time too, but his final series seemed to really make everyone else take notice. Obviously, you guys and recruiters around the country have been following these guys for a long time, but how do you see that debate, I guess, you know, putting yourself in North Melbourne spot, Horne-Francis or Daicos?
Yeah, it's a really difficult one. You know, we've been watching Horne-Francis play since he was 15 and running around for SA as a bottom ager. And, you know, from then on, we've known about him and known how highly he was going to go in this year's draft. And, you know, he's had, you know, a couple of full seasons playing league footy over there, which is, you know, great confidence that any club could have to pick him based on that body of work. But Daicos is a different beast because he'd only sort of played a handful of games this year for Oakley Chargers, and we hadn't seen him come through 16s and, you know, he didn't play as a bottom major last year because of COVID. So, you know, they're two very different players. Horne's obviously the competitive animal that's going to just get the ball going your way because he's just so big and powerful, whereas Daicos is more of that, you know, creative ball user with smarts and competes through his will to just get to contest and keep finding the footy. So I think it would be a hard one. They're just so different that I probably couldn't split them. I think it would be just more what you had an appetite to bring in as a player, whether you wanted that more competitive contest beast or someone who could just you know, really make really good decisions and use the footy so creatively like a Daicos.
Yeah, it's been a very interesting debate and to see how it plays out over the coming years. But obviously North Melbourne, it's been reported that the clubs, the Crows and the Tigers, came pretty hard over the trade period to get their hands on pick one and get their hands on Horne-Francis. But also, any clubs, I guess one for you and the broader list management team, any clubs approached you for pick two and any sort of big godfather offers? Because obviously a lot of clubs do like Finn Callaghan at number two, and obviously would be worried they're not going to be hanging around long after that. So it, I guess, short question, are you going to be keeping pick two?
There definitely has been clubs behind us that have asked the question. You know, and our line has always been, you know, until we've done all the work and, you know, worked out what our strategy is going to be and what our order is, there's no point us engaging in any meaningful discussions. And that process is one that takes place after trade period and all the way up until the draft. So ultimately, while there are clubs that are interested sitting behind us, I think it's good for us to have that flexibility and be in a position where we've got options. If we did end up targeting someone that we thought we might be able to get with a later pick, there would be options there. But, you know, it's also hard to get your head around trading a pick that's in such a good spot. It would want to be a pretty compelling offer. And, you know, I know that those offers were there for North, but I'm not sure they're going to be at the same level for us. And, you know, from the indications we've got so far, there's nothing that's at that level. Even though those clubs are keen to get up, they don't seem like they're throwing up anything that's, you know, really taking our fancy. So I think ultimately the most likely scenario is probably that we just keep the pick and pick, but it's hard to really get a read on anything until closer to the day once we've, I suppose, finalised our order and what our strategy is.
We've got Giants recruiting manager Adrian Crusoe here on the Draft Takeover, the Herald Sun footy podcast. He'll be taking more questions right after this break. What is it about Finn Callaghan in your eyes?
I think clubs just look at him and have a look at his attributes of speed and endurance and really good agility. You know, so he's got the athletic package, but his footy's been able to stack up as well in terms of his ability to make decisions and show composure. Use the footy well by foot and just be, you know, that hybrid midfielder that clubs like. That's probably the reason that those clubs in that range are all looking at him as one of their better options for that pick for sure.
Yeah, it certainly does make sense. He's a quality player, even despite having limited time on the park this year in terms of games. But We've got a listener question for you, Adrian, comes in from Declan. He asks, will you, the Giants, be looking to address the front half of the ground with the pick 13? Guys like Draper, Butler, Sonzi, Judson Clark could be handy going into the future, especially if Bobby Hill does decide to go next year. Is that an area that you may look to address with that pick 13?
Yeah, look, we're always looking at our list long-term and saying, okay, where are the holes? And, you know, watching that semi-final against Geelong, you know, it was pretty evident on that night that the forward half was the area that we had most concern with. And obviously Toby wasn't there and Brent Daniels wasn't there. And, you know, we think like they're both obviously high-end talents in the front half. So I think once we sort of settle on what we're doing with the first pick, it probably will then shape what we do with our next pick. But there's no doubt that, yeah, trying to find something in the front half would be smart at some point, given that, you know, we feel like the young back line really held up this year. When you look at, you know, Taylor and Iden and Jack Buckley and Cumming, who all had really good years, you know, we feel like the back half is coming along really well. The midfield, we know we've been pretty well stocked in recent years. So, you know, that's why that those players mentioned and Josh Rochelli and these sort of players are of interest, because it's hard to find good forward of centre players. And, you know, we feel like that's why we prioritise keeping Bobby, because it's hard to replace a Bobby. So ultimately, I think, you know, it is a need that we have, but it's also not something that we're going to be going out of our way to reach for if we don't believe that the player is the right player. So in short, yeah, it's definitely something we're looking at, but it'll just be weighed up against other positions as well.
Yeah, that's fair enough. And with that pick 13, which will probably become pick 15 after the two bids for Dacos and Darcy, do you think there still will be some real quality talent around that area? Obviously, seems like there's a few sliders that may be available in that mid to late first round range. Will you be looking, obviously you said, it will have a bit to do with that pick too, but do you think there could be a top 10 slider that does come out that you guys may be able to snap up?
Yeah, definitely. It depends who it is. That's the question, and that's what we've got to go through. You know, it's no point just sitting there and hoping something gets through to you and then picking it because it slid through if it's not exactly what you wanted. So we've got to go through that process of working out who are the ones that we believe would help us if they got through. But I think we're comfortable that if nothing did slide through, that what we would be picking, you know, even if it was someone that clubs might have rated a bit later, given that it's our second pick and given that it's our last pick, last live pick, you know, we're pretty comfortable picking someone that we think is going to help us no matter where other clubs might rate them. You know, you look back at, you know, I think Adelaide a few years ago when they picked Tom Duday and it was their last pick and everyone was shocked, but ultimately it's turned out to be a good pick and it was what they needed at the time. So we'll have a similar philosophy with that pick, that it's more about just picking, you know, the player that we believe is best, not someone that we think, you know, necessarily fits into being a pick 15 type player. And that has to be our philosophy. We've had a lot of picks in the teens in the last 4 or 5 years, and we'll also you know, make sure that we're doing our work on what's gone right and what's gone wrong with those picks, because some of those picks have worked out really well and some of those picks haven't. So we don't want to be making the same mistake again. It's just such an interesting part of the draft in the teens, especially for a club like us. But, you know, we'll be making sure that we do our work on what's worked and what hasn't worked. And, you know, it is hard when you've got a side that's, you know, we do have talent, but we also do have some holes. So, you know, there's no perfect player at that part of the draft that you think is going to tick every single box. So it's more about finding an order and a group of guys that you're happy with, and then just waiting to see what's available at the pick.
We're talking with Giants recruiting manager Adrian Crusoe here on the Draft Takeover, the Herald Sun Footy podcast. We'll finish off with one, Adrian, talk about players who are fitting into different brackets. Where does your academy gun, Josh Fay, fit, do you think, into the draft? You speak about You hope to pick those two players with those prized early selections. Where do you think Fay fits in? How have you seen, I guess, his year, obviously, difficult 2021?
Yeah, he's probably a hard one to place, Josh, just given that the majority of his footy has been played, you know, local footy or, you know, under 16s footy. He was playing for New South Wales, so it was Division 2. The one game that he played at the high level this year was the AFL Academy game, and he obviously played outstanding in that game where he won the medal. I think you know, our academy coaches and Cam Bernasconi in particular, who heads up our academy coaching group, I think they've done a great job developing Josh over the last 5 or 6 years. He spent last year up on the Gold Coast, but this year he's come back to Canberra, and you know, he's been able to you know, really develop in terms of his maturity and his ability to, you know, get down and train hard. You know, we saw that with his 2K time of around 6 minutes a couple of weeks ago. So he's improved his fitness. He's got good speed. You know, he's a player who's going to take the game forward. He's pretty aggressive, which is something that clubs look for. Where does he sit in the draft? It's a really hard one. We're obviously hoping that, you know, we can get our two picks in at 2 and 13. And then if the bid comes after that, then, you know, that's obviously our ideal scenario. But we'll be planned for anything. Obviously, there's always a possibility that, you know, players can get bid before you think, or well down the order as well, and it might change our strategy. So we haven't really got a great handle on where he sits just because of what's happened in the back half of the year. But, you know, talent-wise, there's no reason he shouldn't be pushing up in that sort of 15 to 30 range, which is obviously that really even part of the draft, which I spoke about earlier. So that's probably where we think he would be suited in the draft.
For sure. He had obviously that earlier game, that AFL Academy game. He was showed some real skill with his foot skills and his run through the middle. So just to finish, Adrian, thanks for being so generous with your time. You mentioned all those picks in the teens. Last year, you had Tanner Bruin, Connor Stone and Ryan Angwin picked up in the first round. How have you seen their first years? Obviously, we got to see a bit of Bruin and Stone in 2021, but how's their first season been at the Giants?
Yeah, they've had different seasons, I suppose. Like Tanner was one who had a lot of injuries coming through before he got drafted, but this year his body probably held up the best of the three and he played the most senior footy. And I think everyone was really pleased with his development across the year. He had to spend a fair bit of time forward because he couldn't get into that midfield, but, you know, he was right in the middle of that forward line in the finals. So, you know, there's no doubt there's a lot of optimism about him, and he's getting to work this summer on getting fitter and stronger, and hopefully he can get a bit more time in the midfield next year. Connor's another one who, you know, he's a big powerful athlete that, you know, we liked because he's got some versatility and he was able to come in and play some roles for us when he was fit, both as a forward or on the wing. And you know, even in the VFL games he played some midfield time. So we feel like he's another player that can give us some versatility in a few different areas and maybe areas that we lack in terms of that front half and on the wing. And Ryan's one who he was tracking really well, definitely over summer last year when he first got to the club. He had a concussion, which maybe set him back by a few weeks, and then took him a while to get going again. He was starting to play some good footy through the middle of the year, but then he had a hamstring injury and COVID and everything. He wasn't able to really get back and play much quality minutes in the back end of the year. But as that, you know, high endurance running type, we feel like, you know, he complements a lot of the inside grunt that we've got. So I think that, you know, but all three of those boys were happy with how they're tracking. And, you know, we also got to factor that into our decisions for this year is, you know, with picks 2 and 13, not just drafting players that are going to come in and take the spots of those guys. We want to, you know, we've invested in those guys with first round draft picks. So we want to make sure that we give those guys the opportunity to grab one of those spots before just, you know, I suppose picking someone else that might come and compete for the same spot. So we've got full faith in how they're tracking at the moment, but you know, the second year is always the challenge. You know, we've seen it with Caldwell and Haitley and we've seen it with Bonner as well. You know, in that second year, we want those guys to spike and grab a spot. And if they don't, then, you know, the questions are going to be asked of where they're at. So we want to make sure that, you know, those three boys we drafted last year can all make the jump and help us, you know, hopefully as soon as next year.
Some terrific insight there. Thank you, Adrian. As Dan said, we do appreciate you being so generous with your time. You're a busy man at the moment. We look forward to seeing how it all unfolds for you guys in November. Hopefully, we see you a couple of days after starring like you did last year on the AFL website and the Giants website in the video. But good luck in November, and we'll chat to you soon.
Thanks, guys.
Some great insight there, Dan, from Adrian, not only, I guess, into this year's pool, but, you know, from the outside, people just look at what players are available. Adrian, at the end there, spoke about, you know, drafting around what they were already building, and with Tanner Bruin and Connor Stone, what they took last year, what they invested in so early, making sure they don't pick someone who's going to come in and take his spot. So very interesting. What's your take out? Obviously, four guys in that spot for the first two pick, and obviously he did mention there the offers have come, and he didn't sort of say they weren't open to it. So plenty to play out, I think, in that regard.
Yeah, I think it was really fascinating, really just the emphasis on picking on needs rather than the best available. Even with that pick 13, he was saying, you know, they'd had sort of eight in mind and four in mind for that pick two. And you think it's probably Finn Callahan. He mentioned Josh Rochelli as well as that small forward, and he did address that as a need. They're looking a little bit slim in the tall stocks up forward. Yeah, it remains to be seen whether a guy like a Jacob Van Ruin could sort of come into the equation for that pick 13. And obviously for pick two, you know, even a Josh Gibkiss or a Mac Andrew particularly Mac Andrew has been heavily linked to the Giants. So it's going to be really fascinating because obviously they're the ones who are going to shape the draft. If they go with a Gibkiss early, it allows someone else to grab a Callahan or something like that. But yeah, I think the big watch on them will be, do they slide a couple of picks back? Obviously, he said those decisions will be made probably a bit later, a bit closer to the draft. But can they end up nabbing a Josh Gibkiss or a Mac Andrew, which may fulfill their needs a little bit better sliding back and potentially getting another pick as well? Because it seems like Finn Callahan's the hot commodity there, is the second best talent available in the free draft.
Yeah, and I guess just reading between the lines as well, they probably don't want to slide back when that second pick. It's a different conversation, I know, but he spoke about Josh Fay and where he thinks he might fit in. A bit hard to read, but you know, 15 to 30, and they have to plan for everything. But you know, sort of his words were hopeful of that it will come after those two picks. So you know, could be their surprise, and a club, you know, does jump in for a bid that would throw their plans into chaos, I would have thought. But as you mentioned, very well planned. They were very well planned last year. So interesting to see how that plays out. But speaking of bids, since we last spoke, plenty of news. Obviously, the date to nominate as father-son prospects for this year's draft has been and gone, and some interesting names have popped up in the last few days, Dan.
They sure have. Jackson Archer probably hasn't got the fanfare of a lot of other father-sons. The son of Glenn Archer, shinbone of the century. He actually played a VFL game earlier in the year and showed some positive signs. He's North Melbourne are going to have nominated him as a father-son, and he's expected to be sort of a late-to-rookie sort of selection. But I think one of the biggest father-son, and obviously you would have followed him very closely over in South Australia, is Jace Burgoyne. There was a bit of uncertainty, a bit of umming and ahhing, it seemed, about whether he would go to the Power as a father-son. Obviously he had a very strong bottom age year, maybe not as strong in his top age here, but I still think he had a very good finish, and he's certainly, a top 40 selection, or at least in that mix. How have you viewed his year, and how do you think he would fit in at the Power?
Yeah, it's been an interesting one. You know, even at the draft combine a couple of weeks ago, he spoke to the media and he said there's going to have to be some big decisions made. He still had to meet with Port about what they were going to do. But as you said, he has nominated, and he spoke on radio over here in SA a few days ago. And you know, he said from the end of last year and the start of this year, he always thought in his head he'd end up at Port Adelaide, but obviously had plenty of water to go under the bridge. Obviously, they had to make some pretty big calls on his brother Trent, who has been delisted too. So, when he sat down with his dad when Trent got delisted, the thought of moving into state playing for another club didn't sound too bad. So there was definitely at a time where he probably thought he wasn't going to nominate Port, but it's all discussions have been had, and he has. And I think, you know, it's a great fit. They're going to get a great talent. We know that. He's been a bit indifferent given he's had to play at so many levels. He played some league footy for Port when he went and had a stint there. He played some reserves footy for the Eagles back to under 18s. But, you know, a recruiter said to me a few days ago that, you know, what he saw of Jace Burgoyne in his bottom age year, won the Eagles best and fairest in the premiership No, sorry, not a premiership year, but Eagles' best and fairest in his bottom age season, dominated across halfback and on a wing. He saw enough to consider him anyway. So I think Port are going to get a good one there. We'll take some time, I think, but I guess compliments what they have on the inside with his skill and run on the outside.
Just remember that goal in the Lofa final national championships game, swung onto his left in congestion. You know, he has that sort of capability to make things happen, and his skill level, even if he doesn't necessarily find a lot of contested footy, I think his ball use and is just, you know, going to be a nice addition to that power side, considering they're probably going to get him at a fair discount and later in the draft. Another father-son, the son of Shane Woden, former Melbourne and Collingwood player, he's nominated as a Melbourne father-son, which is, you know, nice. He, obviously, he tested really well, Taj Woden, at the WA Combine over there, and it was one of the surprise packets there, and also just some news with the Gold Coast as well. We mentioned Bodie Yuland, a sort of a big-bodied midfielder last week. He has been pre-listed by the Suns, along with the nephew, I believe, of Peter Brock. So it's a couple of players there for the locked in, obviously, with Gold Coast draft consensus. It's the last year they can actually pre-list a player. So particularly Bodie shows some good VFL signs. So I think they're getting a nice addition there.
Yeah, we had a listener send in a question on last week's show, mentioned, you know, that guy that's not getting talked about for the Gold Coast Suns. So he's going to be a nice one and could, you know, ready to play senior footy. Dan, we'll take another quick short break. We'll be back to wrap up, talk about what we've got online currently. We looked at the top 15 midfielders of this year's draft. Next year's a bit of a key position bonanza is looming next year, so clubs are ready to take their next midfield star this year. So we'll quickly discuss that and talk about what's coming up here on the Draft Takeover, the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. As we mentioned on this week on the heraldsun.com.au and advertiser.com.au website, Dan and I have been looking at the best prospects by position. We started off with fours, the small to mid-size fours. There's a few of those floating around. But the big one was the top 15 midfielders of the pool. We looked at it. You can go check that online now in full. Interesting one, Dan. The top two, obviously, we don't really talk about them. It was good to hear Adrian's thoughts on the Jason Horn Francis, Nick Dacos debate. Finn Callahan, we know, slides in under that. But after that, it does, recruiters are split on some of those players, and Adrian did sort of confirm that, saying, you know, after seven or eight, it does get very even. So interesting exercise, but a lot to take out of it. How do you see, obviously you've watched a lot of Josh Ward and Ben Hobbs. Do you think they'd definitely fit in after Finn Callahan there in the order?
I think so, yeah. I have Hobbs just ahead. I think what he was able to do in those two trial games, being able to hit the scoreboard as well, was really exciting for his prospects. Obviously, just a contested beast, can play right away. You'd think Josh Ward is probably more of a balanced midfielder, has been likened to Bombers star Zach Merritt, and is just, you know, an ultra consistent. Obviously, Hobbs is extremely reliable as well. So I think you can't go wrong with either of those, but I'd probably have Hobbs slightly ahead just for his ability to, you know, have an impact straight away and be, you know, potentially a leading inside midfielder in the competition. But yeah, outside of that, you know, there's a few really exciting names, and even some that I think were a little bit stiff to miss. Even a guy like Connor McDonald, who's just been so consistent in the NAB League, and even when he stepped up to big country, he showed he can be a prominent ball winner and make good decisions with the footy. And then you look at even a guy like Marcus Windhager, we probably haven't seen as much this year. And obviously he's had that back injury, so he'll start his preseason off a bit later, you'd think. But yeah, it's a really just the summary is that it's just absolutely stacked with midfielders this draft. And even around the 2030 range, you could be getting a player, a really nice sort of midfield pick, and especially, you know, even some guys like, you know, Matty Johnson, Josh Goda, Neil Erasmus or your boy Nazai Wanganeen-Miller, who's obviously a different midfielder to the bunch. Yes, there's some real quality in there.
Yeah, you know how much I like Josh Goeder as well, and what he possibly projects as if he can sort of build that endurance base and play through the midfield at the top level. Could turn out to be one of the best midfielders of the draft. But quickly on Nazaia, there's been some question marks over the contested side of his game. We mentioned it last week how, you don't want him at the bottom of the pack. You want him on the outside finishing off the work. But, I went back over his numbers again, and in the Sandful Reserves Grand Final, he had 20 possessions, Wanganeen-Miller. 11 were contested. He recorded a season-high 7 tackles. So I've seen him win some his own footy at league level as well over here in the Sandful. So I think some of those concerns are slightly overstated. Obviously, he just plays his outside role pretty well. Neil Erasmus, another interesting one there in that sort of mix. Has so many elite traits. He's kicking a little bit of a concern, I guess, but does so many other things well that clubs might overlook that. It's interesting to see if one of the Perth clubs, West Coast or Frio, do pounce inside that first 12 or 13 on draft night. Dan, coming up, we're going to be looking at defenders and tools of the draft pool, maybe even look at some of the X-factor players. But just quickly, one preview I want to look at for defenders. Andrew Capel and I put out our top 30 draft prospects last week, as you did yours, top 30 Victorian prospects. You can check those out now on the websites. But one who is rising quickly, spoken of, Alistair Lord from Nord, a dashing defender, was the quickest for the agility test in the country. He's really making clubs take notice, and he did in the last month of the year. And interesting to see that Nord senior coach Jade Rawlings come out last week and declare that Lord was the pick of their draft prospects for 2021, which is interesting because they do have Cooper Murley, who we know who could potentially still go in the top 40 despite missing most of the year. He was dominant. He was sort of earmarked as a top 10 selection a couple of years out from this year's draft but battled injury. So interesting to watch Alistair Lord, where he fits in. Could he push that top 30 on draft night? We'll be wait and see how that all plays out. So that's an interesting one. They're not sure if you've seen much of him as well, but if you want to say something to him, but your top 30, how are you feeling after putting that out? Anyone that could sort of slide in late?
Well, it's really difficult with the Victorian prospects. Some of them didn't even test the combine. Obviously, some of them had a Strava 2-kilometer time trial, and Josh Ward tested really well in that. But a lot of these guys you haven't seen, since close to the middle of the year. So it is difficult judging some of them. There are a couple that I do like later in the piece. Paul Curtis in particular, I think, can provide some value. Obviously, we sort of know the top sort of Victorian prospects, but Paul Curtis, I had him in at 24, but he was one of the most consistent goal kickers, even at in the Victorian Challenge match and the Victorian trial, kicked 3 goals in both of those. He kicked 4 goals against Sandringham as well. So I think he's just one who needs to, improve his endurance a little bit, but he's certainly got the forward craft and the goal sense to be a really nice small forward. One to watch as well, Charlie Dean, who won the Fothergill Round Mitchell medalist, who I think we mentioned on the podcast last week that it really is sort of a golden ticket into the AFL in recent years. And I think he, a 20-year-old, he was previously played as a forward at Sandringham, but he's transformed into an intercept defender and really thrived this year, 195-centimetre key defender. And there's a really, it's a bit lacking this draft in terms of depth for talls, particularly late in the piece. So, and obviously Charlie Dean was a late invite to the combine. So you'd think there'd be some clubs interested there, and he could be provide some value a bit later in the piece.
Very interesting. We're into November, as we've mentioned throughout the show. Not long left, but we will have a few more podcasts to go. Let's see if we can top this week's guest, Adrian Caruso. Thank him for his time again. We'll see what we can come up with next week. And, of course, check us out on Twitter at Jordan Pinto with a 0 and at that Dan Batten _. We'll talk draft with you whenever you want. HeraldSun.com.au, advertiser.com.au for all the latest draft content. Look out for our best defenders and tools over the week and the weekend. And I think our big mock draft might get off the ground. We might be doing the whole draft then if we can find some time, as we mentioned last week. So keep an eye out for that, and we'll catch you here next week, we hope, with the third edition of the Takeover the Herald Sun Footy Podcast, the draft edition.